Welcome back to Blessed or the Spiraling. We're learning how the chaotic search for significance can lead to joy through life's shifting seasons. We're so glad you're here, especially if you've had to experience the pain of grief in your life. And that's something we find in Scripture. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 1, look what Isaiah the prophet says. Isaiah is widely regarded as the greatest prophet in the Old Testament, for sure, maybe in the whole Bible. His 66 books are so powerful, and yet notice the loss that he begins his ministry with. It says in verse 1 of Isaiah 6, "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple." This is the beginning of Isaiah's ministry. His ministry began with loss. It began with grief. It began with difficulty. There can be unexpected blessing in difficulty. And is that not what Isaiah the prophet says? He starts with death. "In the year King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord." And Uzziah was a good king. He says the death of this good king, which is a hard thing to face, someone he loved, his friend, someone he trusted, he worked with. Now, all of a sudden, this king dies. He says, "But I saw the Lord." See the comparison there? There's beauty in the nosedive. The title of today's message is Fresh Grief, Fresh Glory. Fresh grief, fresh glory, because the truth is, the deeper the pit of our pain, the more space there is for our lives to be filled with God's grace. And if your life feels like there's a hole in it, the hole of someone precious, especially who's been ripped out, I hope and pray that God will meet you today where you are. And if you're not in that situation today, with all due respect and grace and kindness, there will come a day when you will be. You'll say, "How can you say that?" Well, here's how I can say that. Because nothing and no one can stop the onslaught of time. Is that not the truth stated in Ecclesiastes 3? Chapter 3, verse 3. There's a time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down, a time to build up. A time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones. A time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. A time to gain, a time to lose, a time to keep, a time to throw away. A time to tear, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. What is that passage telling us? That passage is telling us there's always another spiral. There's always another spiral. There's always another difficulty coming. Now, there's a good side of that. There's a time to hug, and that's good. There's a time to gather stones, and that's good. There's a time to heal, but behind that is the time to lose what you gathered, a time to tear what you've sown, a time to say goodbye, and not just a time to say hello. There's always another spiral. Yes, there's a time to be born, but there's also a time to die. And that's the reality of life. The bad news is there's always another spiral. This is true. We are all either in a storm, coming out of a storm, or about to go into a storm. And yet what we can believe is that even in the spirals of grief, which are some of the most destructive of spirals, that God can be there. God can meet us there. C.S. Lewis used the analogy of a tornado to describe his experience with grief. C.S. Lewis never thought he was going to get married. He was a happy bachelor into later years. But then he was surprised by falling in love with a woman named Joy. His autobiography is called Surprised by Joy. And it's his journey of coming to know Jesus. But it's also a play on words, because he was also surprised by Joy, the woman that he married. But then she tragically got cancer and went home to be with Jesus not too long after they got married. He found it very difficult because he never thought he was going to have a wife. But then to find love and then have it ripped from his hands and to watch her painfully succumb to this was so challenging for him. And he describes the grief for us to look into his experience with these words. He says, "In grief, nothing stays put. Nothing stays in the bin it's supposed to be in, right? One keeps on emerging from a phase, but it always reoccurs. Round and round, everything repeats. Am I going in circles? Or dare I hope I am on a spiral? But if a spiral, am I going up or down it? The stages of grief, anger, bargaining, right? Hopefully that can lead you to acceptance." What's he saying? And what my experience is that it's not tidy. You're done with one phase permanently, on to the next one. I have had days where I went through all the stages by breakfast, right? And now it's like I'm going to be back in them all over. He said, "I'm here. I was just here. I thought I was further. Now I took 4 steps forward and I'm taking 3 steps back. What's going on? I thought it would be further along. I found," and this is my experience, "I thought one realm of grief would help me or give me a leg up in facing the next one. But then it dawned on me, I've never grieved this before. This is a different grief because it's a different person. My relationship was different. And so my thinking, I'd be better, actually caused me to turn my back on the ocean, and then the waves really took me out. And here's the interesting thing. A tornado is not a singular event. Did you know that? There can be tornadoes within tornadoes. An F5, which can go on for miles, can have dozens of smaller tornadoes on the inside of it. So that's why, have you ever seen footage of a neighborhood where a tornado passed through? Some houses stand, some don't. Not all got the same number of tornadoes over them. So you can't look at one person who was taken out by a trial on yourself and think, well, I'm going to do better. You might not. Going through the same exact thing, have the same exact situation come across your life. There can be sub-tornadoes, tornadoes within tornadoes. And that's the bad news. No matter what you're facing today, there's another spiral on the horizon. But I also have good news. So having delivered the bad news of there's always another spiral, here's the good news. Are you ready for it? There's always another spiral. It's true. Because he doesn't just say King Uzziah died. He said, in the year King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. In the year King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. And that happened not just once for Isaiah. But get this, that happened to him multiple different times. He spiraled into God's presence and spiraled up from earth to heaven over and over again. Look back just a couple of chapters to Isaiah, chapter 1, verse 1. Look what he says. He says, the vision of Isaiah, the son of Amos, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of, look at this, Uzziah. That's the first king that began his ministry. But then Uzziah dies, then King Jotham gets taken out, then King Ahaz gets taken out, and Hezekiah gets taken out, the kings of Judah. And some people suggest, though he doesn't mention him, he also ministered for a little bit during the reign of King Manasseh. Okay, now, stay with me. This ministry that Isaiah has of calling the nations of Israel to repentance on the eye of the Assyrian captivity, 722 BC, and before the Babylonian captivity, these two massive deportation events where the children of Israel get so sinful, they end up getting taken into captivity as divine training that God wants to teach them. And these events that he's there to warn them, saying, guys, stop. They're running headlong towards a bridge, and the bridge is out. He's saying, stop. This is not how you're supposed to be going. Nobody listens. And even the leadership, the kings, one after the other end by getting taken out and end up dying and end up falling. And for Isaiah, each time it would have been a sucker punch. Each time it would have been another punch to the gut. But as it happened the first time, in the year King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. It happened when King Manasseh died. It happened when King Ahaz died. It happened when King Jotham died. You see what I'm saying? It happened when King Hezekiah died. Each time an earthly throne or earthly seat got emptied, he once again spiraled up to God's presence. In the year King whoever died, I saw the Lord. What I'm trying to say is no matter what causes you to spiral in grief, it can cause you to spiral up to God's presence if you just keep looking up to Him. Keep lifting your eyes up to Him. How does Isaiah, the 66 chapters of his book, contain so many beautiful prophecies? I mean, the most famous of all, of course, being Isaiah 53, the most specific, detailed rendering of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ ever. Well, it's because he continued to look at Jesus, no matter what he faced in this life. And listen, if Isaiah could do it, you can do it. You can spiral your eyes up to the one who's on the throne. Because what Isaiah saw when he looked to heaven stopped him in his tracks. Now, if he, Isaiah, is like me, before he saw God, he probably was frustrated and had some questions. And he's thinking, God, why would you let this happen? And where are we going to be? Because especially singling out Uzziah, he was a very good king who reigned for 52 years. And to have a good king who reigns that long, then all of a sudden gets taken out, you're going to be worried. You're going to be stressed. You're going to be troubled. And no doubt Isaiah was. And God, how are we going to survive without Uzziah? How is this going to work without Uzziah? He was spinning round and round and round and round. Then he says, I saw the Lord seated on a throne. And guess what? He was stopped right there in his tracks. Look what he says. This is verse 5. He said, so I said, woe is me, for I'm undone. And he goes on and basically says, nothing. I'm rendered speechless. And the deeper Isaiah fell at the feet of the Lord, the more, as he lifted his eyes, God showed him. Do you hear it? In the year King Uzziah died, I saw God. Fresh grief, fresh glory. And even though he had already spiraled and saw something in God, when the next king died, when the next difficulty happened, when the Assyrian captivity happened anyway, when even after the Assyrian captivity, the tribes of Judah continued to persist in a way that was going to guarantee they would go the same way into the Babylonian captivity. When he spiraled down and looked into God, he saw even more. He saw even more. And there is no end to what you can see, because eye has not seen and ear has not heard what God has prepared for those who love him. Isaiah was shaken. He fell on his face, and he continued to spiral up into God's presence. And you can do the same. What I want to do is I want to give you 7 things that can help you in your moments of spiraling to keep your eyes on God and to keep going up, around, and around in the right direction. 7 things to keep opening up fresh glory when you're facing fresh grief. Number 1, mourn specifically and thoroughly. This is training for the trial you're not in yet, if you're not grieving today. But it's hopefully helpful information for those of you who are in the midst of it currently. Mourn specifically and thoroughly. So let's start with thoroughly. If you don't go through it, the grief, it's going to be a ticking time bomb waiting to go off in your life, meaning you need to just feel it. The only way through it is to feel it. Now, the problem is that there's lots of things that we can do to numb ourselves so we don't feel bad, because we don't like to feel bad. And we can do lots of different things to alter our state and to keep ourselves from actually feeling it. And the only problem with numbing yourself is that not feeling is not the same as healing. And you can numb and not feel it, and you'll come back out of the numbness, and you'll need to numb it again. And that problem's still going to be there waiting for you to deal with it. Eventually. And if it doesn't come out and get processed in healthy ways, it's going to come out and force you to deal with it in unhealthy ways. You have to feel it to heal it. And the problem is, feeling is uncomfortable. And it's a lot easier just to eat something. It's a lot easier just to drink something. It's a lot easier just to smoke something, to dull that pain, because it's so brutal. but only in feeling it deeply with God can it actually be healed and no longer be this open wound inside of you. So that's thoroughly. I dare you into the difficult journey of feeling that pain. But then secondly, you also need to deal with it specifically. Mourn it specifically. What do I mean? I mean, don't accidentally mourn things that you shouldn't. And that's the trick of mourning, is differentiating. Why? Okay, have you ever felt overwhelmed because of the amount of laundry in your home? Laundry that needs to be done. Anybody, honestly? Because it can become like a mountain of laundry. And then it's just so daunting. You know what? We should just burn it and run away. I don't need clothes. Who needs clothes? Forget about it. Because it's just so daunting. Because it's so big. So what are you supposed to do in those moments? Sort it out. Differentiate the pile. So you have the whites, you have the colors, you have darks. And if you take that big, overwhelming thing that needs to be done and start sorting it out, it becomes less intimidating. And if you're like me, you'll also find some things in the pile that don't even need to be washed. Because you'll do what? This one's fine. It's perfectly fine. Why did you even have it in there? Okay. When you're grieving, you'll feel this overwhelming, this whole grief. What do you grieve? Just about everything connected to that person. Everything about, I'm just grieved so much. It's so much, right? Okay. Differentiate it. How do you do that? You answer three questions. Okay. Number one, what have I not lost? What's in this pile that I'm tempted to grieve that shouldn't be in this pile? I haven't lost all of the time that I spent with them and the way they shaped me. I haven't lost a single one of those things. Then that continues to the present moment where even not being here, I feel their impact in my life. And they continue to shape me by my feeling how profoundly I'm impacted by their absence. The negative space of them being taken away has shown me what a giant, what an icon, what a gift I was given. And so that's not been taken from me. That's getting out of the pile. I'm not going to grieve that. Why? It's still mine. We're going to pull some stuff from the pile. And whatever you find that goes in that bin, what are we going to do? We're going to cherish it. I'm going to be thankful for it. I'm going to sit in it and be thankful for it. And I'm going to continue to enjoy it. Second, we're going to ask, what can't I lose? What can't I lose? Because I'm a Christian and I'm headed to heaven and I'm mourning now the absence of someone who didn't go into the ground but went to be with Jesus in heaven, which is where I'm going. That means that there's going to come a day when I'm reunited with all of those who have died in the Lord. And so I don't need to feel bad for someone who's died because they've just gone to sleep in Jesus. They're not going to miss out on anything. I'm not going to mourn my future with them because I can't lose that. You see that? So that's going out of the mountain of grief, and that's going into a bend called, I get to hang on to that. Thank you very much. Okay, so what's left? What I actually have lost. What have I lost? Well, I've lost the ability to text them today. Grieve that. Grieve it. Feel it. Mourn it. I wish I could. I'm just going to sit in the grief of what actually has been taken from me. But I'm not going to slip into some future thing, which is what? Oh, you know, you won't be there at my daughter's wedding. We're not promised tomorrow. I'm not going to grieve something that hasn't happened yet. I'm sad that right now I can't call them because all I have is today. Jesus frees us from worrying about tomorrow. And I'm only going to grieve that right now, that I can't actually physically call them. That's the only thing I'm actually going to grieve right now. Number two, I'm going to deal with myself gently, and so are you. How to spiral up, not down, deal with yourself gently. When you're in one of those C.S. Lewis tumbles, and you're like, wait a minute, I'm back in this phase again. I already got done with anger. I should not be back to anger. And so what do? You get angry with yourself, don't you? Why are you so far behind in grief? Other people do better. It's not helpful when you're feeling bad, making yourself feel bad for feeling bad. It's one of the guaranteed ways to not be on your own side. And so, instead, I'm going to deal with you and me the same way. What do you mean? Well, if you came to me and said, I'm struggling, do you know what I would do? I would say, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. But you're here. You're here worshiping anyway. You're here asking for prayer. And I would find anything I could to encourage you. And I would tell you, look at God. You got this. And I would be on your side. I wouldn't shame you at all for mistakes. I would say, it is what it is. But let's go to God now. Let's trust God now. Why do I instead berate me and shame me and judge me and not deal gently with myself? And can I just be your Father in heaven speaking to you right now about this situation? You're struggling with this. You've never been here before. How could you be good at something that you've never done? This is new. This is clumsy. This is weird. I free you from the need to be good at something that you've never done. Be bad at it, but keep trying. You've got this, and God's with you. So look up from the empty chair and look up to His, because He's still on the throne. He's still up to something in your life. So, could I say something to you about you? Be kind to my friend. Don't talk about my friend that way. You got this. And may we be as kind to ourselves as we would be to each other. All right, number three. Be vulnerable with community. Let people in. I hope you have Christians that you can call. And I hope most of all that when you need to call them, that you do. Young people, calling is a thing your phone can also do when you're not texting. Now, I'm going to show you the lie. A sneaky lie from the devil. But it's a lie. James 5:16. Confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. Okay. If I don't let my friend help heal me, I'm becoming a greater burden to them by remaining an unhealed version of myself in the relationship where they could help me to become a freer version, less of a burden to them, not more. So be vulnerable with community. Number four, talk to God honestly. Don't hurt as bad as you are and then give God flowery prayers that you think He wants to hear. He wants to hear how you're actually doing, not how you wish you were doing. So be raw with Him and brutally honest with Him. Give Him the unvarnished truth. 1 Peter 5:7, give all your worries and cares to God, for He cares about you. Be honest with God. Number five, share what you learn selflessly. Commit, even though you're hurting so bad right now that you can hardly even think of a day coming when you're going to help someone else because you need so much help today. I just encourage you to commit right here, commit now, that anything that God does to give you glory in your grief, that you're going to share it with anybody else coming along later who needs it. Just commit right now. Because if God's going to unlock new glory, there's going to be other people who need it. There's this great scene in Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade where Harrison Ford makes it across this invisible chasm. This is so scary for him. Then he gets across to the other side and he grabs these pebbles and he throws it back. And all of a sudden you can see the bridge. So everybody coming along afterwards can step on the pebbles and make it through. And that's what I did. I collected my pebbles for you. You cross your scary places of spiraling as well. And now 180 this because the other people coming along behind you need it too. Just be willing to share, to be vulnerable, to let people see the parts of you that you wish you would hide a little bit and encourage them in their difficulty. Number six, interpret the struggle accurately. When we face another spiral, even if we barely got our breath from the last one, we're trying to interpret it accurately. Here's how you're going to interpret it. This new spiral is an unpleasant means to a blessed end. This leads to blessing. Say it over your spiraling. This leads to blessing. This leads to blessing. What authority do I have to say it? Jesus. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who are persecuted. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the spiraling. In Jesus' estimation, we're blessed because that pain is going to lead us to look to Him. And when we look to Him in our pain, He fills us with His presence. And then we walk away blessed. Tornadoes get classified on what the final word is of the damage assessment. What's an F3 or what's an F5? So in your life, while you're tempted to say, this is terrible, this is bad, you can't write the story yet. In the end, it's going to be what God says about it. And He gets the last word. And He speaks over your situation, over your spiraling today. There's blessing. He says, there's Me. He says, there's glory in it. Isaiah chapter 6, one more time before we close. This is what the seraphim are doing. Isaiah says, I saw the Lord. He was sitting on the throne. His robe filled the temple with glory. And then he said this, the seraphim, these angels that fly around God's throne constantly. Revelation 4 and 5, they're there as well. Isaiah chapter 6, here they are. 700 years apart from these two books being written. And yet the same thing's happening. Seraphim are flying around saying, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of His glory. No, but it's grief. No, but it's glory. No, but it's grief. No, but it's glory. How do you spiral up? You keep looking at God from another angle. From another angle. It was Uzziah's death. It was Jotham's death. It was Amos' death. It was Manasseh's death. It was Hezekiah's death. It's how am I going to handle life without them? It's going, am I going to deal with this new difficulty? We just got to keep spiraling and looking and spiraling and looking and worshiping. And He's holy. And He's glorious. And there's more. You haven't ended. It's not over. Just keep looking. There's no end to the goodness of God. There's no end to the feet of Jesus. And no matter what life's taken from you, there's another spiral. There's always another spiral that you can take around the throne. Last point. Number 7, perhaps the most important, store your eggs carefully. The eggs of your value, the eggs of your worth, the eggs of your identity. You've got to pick your basket very intentionally because the world would have you to store them in the basket of this life, where your worth comes from. What you do, what you get to wear, where you get to live, and who you get to know, and how you got to play, and where you get to. And if your value comes from that, that's getting taken from you. There's a time to be born and a time to die, a time to play in the NFL and a time to get cut. And a time to be successful and a time to stop being successful. And a time to be the youngest one and a time to be a little bit long in the tooth. And a time to get everybody and a time for people to go. Who's that? And are you still around? And oh, I forgot about you. And that's just life on this planet. And if you're storing your eggs of your identity anywhere other than glory, they're going to get taken from you. But if you are like me, what makes you you comes from Jesus. Death doesn't take you from your treasure. It takes you to it. Death doesn't take you from your home. It takes you to it. Okay? Let's store our eggs in glory.